You are listening to iRadio TT, online all the time.
Welcome to Music Matters, the Caribbean edition. The podcast series featuring news, interviews and analysis of all the music from the islands.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Music Matters,
the Caribbean edition. I am Laura Dorridge Phillips.
And I am Nigel Campbell. And once again, we're talking about the business of music here in the Caribbean.
Yes, we are. So, Nigel, how have you been?
Well, with the extended curfews and a lot of lockdown and restrictions, not very motivated, but I have to admit, the industry goes on, the music goes on, but I'm trying to rebuild myself and get back out and have conversations and try to restart this podcast. And Laura, thanks for waking me up, and here I am. How are you?
Yes, I am good. I mean, for the listeners who maybe join us for the first time, we are based in Trinidad and Tobago. We are in a state of emergency for the first time since COVID, the pandemic. We mm-hmm. are under curfew. The good and bad is that we're watching everywhere else opening up. We're watching the US opening up, Nigel.
Correct.
The good thing is that our soca artists and promoters are getting mm-hmm. an opportunity now to make a living, because they have been able to earn real money over the last year. So now we're seeing everybody, if you're on Instagram, you're seeing everybody. It looks like the whole industry is now in the US.
They've moved to North America and the island is empty. But say what?
Yes, yes.
But I have to admit, I'm happy that they've gotten an ease up, as it was. Obviously, you know, since March of last year, when the pandemic was announced in Trinidad, of course, everything was shut down and the entertainment industry was put at the end of the line to reopen. So yes, having the opportunity certainly to go to America and get vaccines out there, because anybody can get a vaccine in America, it's a plus for them. But so that in terms of our live music industry, kudos to them for the ability to go abroad. So I think right now it's approaching summer carnivals in America, and certainly famously Miami Carnival.
But Miami Carnival is on. Costumes are sold out. Even designers in Trinidad have mm-hmm. gotten jobs selling mm-hmm. designing costumes. I think all roads lead to Miami in October. So, yeah.
And I hope that Carnival 2022 is a real thing, but we'll see what happens, because, you know, vaccine rollout in the Caribbean has been slower than vaccine rollout in the United States. But we'll see what happens. But as you and I both know, the music industry is more than the live music industry. And one of the things that we've been trying to follow, because we have lockdowns, is our ability to be part of the wider music industry. And Laura, you brought the best person for us to talk to today. Talk to us, Laura. Tell us.
Indeed. I mean, not everybody has the opportunity to go outside and make money from a carnival fete, as you rightly said. It is mm-hmm. the industry in the Caribbean is way beyond soca. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of artists in the Caribbean who do different types of music, which may not be as popular mm-hmm. locally, but mm-hmm. they have found a way to mm-hmm. make a living because they're not relying on gigs. One of those, to me, the man leading that charge is Marcus Brave Boy, known professionally in the music industry as Brave Boy.
Yo. Brave Boy. Yo. It's a pandemic, in case you don't know, but I've always been so sick with the flow. Knock all these verses like eight in a row. You might just say I'm becoming a pro.
Formerly known as Mark Hardy.
Hello. You have a million and one names. Go ahead.
Just not be like a prince, so it's just a symbol.
There you go. Welcome, Marcus Brave Boy. Welcome, Brave Boy.
Thank you, Nigel and Laura. I'm a big fan of the podcast, and I'm happy. I'm just the fact that podcast just happening in the Caribbean makes me excited.
Hey, you're trying that thing. What I got to tell you? And I have Laura, the richest number one journalist in the Caribbean, to do that with me. Go, Laura, talk to us.
Flattery all around. So, Brave Boy, welcome to Music Matters, the Caribbean edition. For the listeners who may not know who you are, tell us a little bit about yourself. Introduce yourself, a little bit about your career, what you have done, and then we'll go into what you have been doing recently.
Okay, so let me see if I can summarize as much as possible. So, real name, Marcus Brave Boy. son of media personality, Hilton Braithwaite. Gotta big up my father. And yes. I have to big him up because my journey starts with him. You know, my father was very much into the media and culture, and, you know, like, he used to sing calypso and play harmonica. And he made sure that music was instilled in me as at a very young age. So driving to nursery school, he would have me, you know, like, creating compositions, like rewrite calypsos, go back and forth, extempoing and doing calypsos. And then, you know, he entered me into calypso. I entered the NJAC calypso competition when I was in primary school. And then I entered 12 and under when I was 12 years old, the last year to enter. And I won best instrumentalist. I used to play clarinet. And I attended the Brass Institute. I was part of the Love Movement Junior Choir. So I'm an only child, by the way. So that's why he's here and I've called a lot of things.
I mean, everything.
He has one child. So, you know, he got me involved in a lot of things. And I also had a period where I wanted to be a DJ, just like most, you know, like I grew up, you know, my teenage years were in the 90s. So Sound System days for me, you know, like I had a quick stint in a Sound System. And it stopped when, at our first gig, the computer shut down. but funny enough, that allowed me the opportunity to test my skills in chanting, because I was always a big fan of Treason, and I couldn't afford doublets. So my thing, I used to imitate dancehall artists, and, you know, me and my friends would create our own doublets. I met Ken Sherrock Holder, when I was around 15, and he was like and still is like a mentor to me in the industry. And I did my first professional production with him, which I co-produced, called The Breathless Show. Because I was in a group at the time called The Breathless Group. And that song used to play on the radio and things. So, like, I definitely got my first set of radio play at 15 years old. A big throwback there. Entered Soca Monarch, entered Youth Fest. You know, didn't have success in those particular. I was always very different. My first, so just to expand on my first release, it was a hip-hop juve song.
You know, we love fusion, man. We love fusion.
Back
keep it.
Then, right? And I think that was just too much for because you had the time to understand. And then I also did a drum and bass soca. That's the first soca I ever really wrote. So I was always different. Like, I say that just to say I was always very different.
What was the name of that drum and bass soca song?
It was called Psst, Let Me Get a Flexor.
Makes sense. Makes sense.
Let me get a flex now. Let me get a flex now, baby. Let me get a flex now. And then I did a compilation of parodies called Roti Gold, where we took it was like a spin-off on Reggae Gold. Mm-hmm. You know, so I was in a neighborhood with a lot of I grew up in a neighborhood where we used to have a lot of fun. And we used to be home, and, you know, I was the one with the computer and the mic. And so I guess when I see, like, the Zest movement and the Trinibad movement, it reminds me of that era of when people used to be beating on the desk and singing and going home and recording stuff on the cheap computer mic. And it's just we didn't have social media.
Yes, yes. But Marcus, you also created your own genre of music.
Yes, okay. So after that experience, I took a little break from being an artist, and after shout out Graham Wilson, you know, like family friend. I remember my dad took me to meet with him just to give some advice. And he was like, you know what, Marcus, like, honestly, you need to study the business side as well. And you need to, like, you know, you have a brain, use your brain. You know, yes, creativity always be there. But what is industry lacking are professionals on the business side of the industry.
Say that again, Marcus Brain Boy. Mm-hmm. Say that again.
So, no, it's a funny story because I remember Uncle Graham, I still call him Uncle Graham. I remember going to his studio in St. Anne's before he migrated. And I wanted to apprentice there as a producer. And I remember leaving the meeting kind of feeling like, well, I didn't, he's not really giving my opportunity or a shot. But funny enough, that advice he gave me really steered me in a different direction, even if it's consciously or subconsciously. But yeah, he was telling me that, you know, we need more industry professionals. And yes, I can see that you have the musical talent. But I would encourage you to study music, as in study the business side of music, the other side, legal side, etc. So that took me into a different direction. I started working to save money to study music business. I was looking at college in London. I was looking at NYU. I was looking at a few places to get my bachelor's degree in music business. And then I was working as a court transcriptionist. And while working as a court transcriptionist and saving my money, some of my coworkers started their law degrees. And at the time, they were saying, well, you're here in Trinidad, you might as well do it. Mm. So I was like, all right. So I started my LLB. And that took me to a whole different, on a whole different journey. And then I got an opportunity to work on a project with an artist named Anya Lienis and myself and my friend Simon. Simon Khan, we visited New York to be on this project with her, and we're trying to make her the next Rihanna. So that gave me a whole different perspective in terms of actually going to New York, meeting with Atlantic Records. I met Sycamore. Sycamore is actually the guy responsible for Travis Scott and YG and a lot of people.
Yes.
And at the time, he was the head A&R in Urban for Atlantic Records, and he's Trini. You know, he's a Laura Nigel, as somebody else should definitely.
Yes,
Trini everywhere, but keep going.
Trini everywhere. So, but I think I was just able to meet a lot of people there, like Beyonce's choreographer, Zach Simmons, and Trey Song stylist. And it was just like my way of understanding how a real industry works. So it was like a crash course, you know, understanding how a real, and over there seeing, because the persons who would be in the classes with Anya are persons signed to labels, you know. Mm. So it opened my mind and made me realize. So I came back to Trinidad with that mentality. And I think that is the reason why a lot of people say I stand out as an artist, as in Trinidad. Like, not yes, I'm talented, yes, this, yes, that, but in terms of my approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it was from those experiences. Yes, I used to do different music. Yes, you know, I always had an open mind, but I think understanding how a real industry works and coming back and trying to apply that to what I do here really is responsible for a lot of the things that you see now. I didn't really understand how to do things, and you know, we don't really have mentors here in terms of the alternative routes. Like if you're not going on the right. So I battled with that. But it allowed me to really, you know, just educate myself, and I hope to pass on that information to younger artists and creatives, so they don't really have to deal with some of the battles that I went through.
You do have your LLB. At this point?
Yes, I have my LLB from the University of London. I decided not to go to Hewarden or to actually become an attorney, just because, you know, I that journey of being an artist, I just wanted to explore fully, and I knew that I'll have to drop it to focus on.
Understand,
so that was just a personal choice I made.
Not a problem, because understand something, in the world of business, in the world of modern business, having an LLB is actually a plus for a number of people in the corporate world, in the C-suite, as they call it. Because the business of music, you identified a couple of things. Aside from being an innovator at 15, collecting royalties, more power to you on that. And innovating, creating your own genre, more power to you on that. You're able to recognize that relationships are important. So you get to meet persons, whether it's a stylist or a choreographer or a assistant producer. The idea of relationships, I think, is critical in this industry. And what you've described, it certainly puts that front and center. More power to you for actually acknowledging that. I think part and parcel of what you and I, what Laura and I have been trying to do in this podcast is talking about the business of music. And you actually were able to go down a particular pathway that is, I wouldn't say unique, but certainly is one of those that kind of drives revenue in this multiple revenue stream industry that we have. So I know that you was Mark Hardy and Young Rudd, and you were doing Trapso, and you had a career as a music artist. But tell me what guide you into the direction of synchronization, if you don't mind.
Okay, so it was very, because all right, so just to fast forward a bit even more.
Don't go too fast, we have time.
Yeah, no problem, just making sure. But so New York, so I just wanted to touch that New York definitely really inspired me. I came back to Trinidad and I started working with Giandre Diaz and Tamara Carpet of Green and Bush Studios. And they really were the first, after Ken, I consider them mentors as well, because Giandre especially really taught me how to record, and you know, just about the professionalism of an artist, you know, just how to understand certain, like a lot of producers I work with locally, or even when I travel, they always say that I'm such an easy artist to work with. And I think that comes from my training from Giandre. I think Giandre taught me, you know, from a producer's perspective, what to do, what not to do when dealing with producers. And a lot of Caribbean artists, people tend to say we're not very professional, but any producer that or a studio that works with me, or any of the producers that you see me linking with, I'm very professional with them. I could still be creative. I could, you know, talk shippiness and have fun, but I know how to be very professional in a recording session. But after G-Andre, I started messing around with hip hop. Just, you know, mixtapes were very popular. Like that was probably like around 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to try my own like rapping in a Trini accent over hip hop beats. So mm-hmm. I had a mixtape called WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get. Mm-hmm. And one of the songs was I'm a Trini.
Yo, Mr. Mark Hardy. Yeah, well, Mr. F to the L to the E to the X to the X to the D to the E to the M to the P to the R to the O to the P to the E to the R. Rah. You know what it is. Mr. Flex them proper, I'ma do it big. So give it up, yeah, all my Trini kids. Until the world know, say who this Trini is. You see me in the place, yeah. Say tell the people them that I'm a Trini. Yeah. Say represent to the world, yeah. And tell the people them that I'm a Trini, yeah.
I shot a music video for it at Santana.
That was a big song.
That was a huge hit, boy.
Yes, and it was a remix one. And Slam 100.5 after Build Them Up especially. They really just play that song every day. And I think that got me some, you know, known in the local underground scene and, you know, like in the person so into hip-hop here started to know the name Mark Hardy. And then I started to do songs with, I'd pick up Tim Star took me on tour. But him, he was doing like a local tour. So I would, myself and Flippo would perform with him. And then after that, I met Young Rod. While going by Mevon to record a song for the mixtape, he said he has his friend named Isaac. So I said, and you know, he raps as well. And he's David Rudder's son and et cetera. I said, well, yeah, I could bring him. And then Rods and I just clicked from that day. The first time we met, we recorded a song and shot a music video. In his very first session. And that was the birth of Trap Soul, because we started to meet by Mevon. I think it was around the state of emergency.
2011. And
yes. Mm-hmm. And we started to record music, and Pumpin' was the first song that we did. It was just an experiment. It was supposed to be just one song. And mm-hmm. it turned out to be a whole movement.
In a big way. Nah boy.
Nah boy. And I mean, honestly, that is one of my favorite career milestones, just because it made me really proud to be from Trinidad on a whole next level, because I think before that project, I didn't understand the power of the Trini accent, the power of our Trini culture and the day-to-day.
Yes.
I always felt like when you talk to Trini, it's jokey, or if it do this, you know, like it gave me confidence and it gave me, you know, just that faith in my own culture and pride in my own culture, not in a carnival way only, but in a this is how we talk, this is how we eat, this is how we with lime. And I think that was really important for the rest of this journey that I'm going through now, because I'm approaching the international market as a proud Trini.
Thank you for that.
Not running away from my heritage.
Yo. So here with the team now, boy. All right, here with my team now, boy. Represent for the red, white, black. Every day we be living our dreams now, boy. So just say what you feel now, boy. We just keeping it real now, boy. All around the world, they ask me where we from. We say TMT.
Because that era of Nahboy happened, there was a movement at that time. You had 868,
Nebula
868.
Right.
You had people like Inzi. You had a whole a whole underground movement that was very rooted in our Trininess and creating their own path and not wanting to, you know, just do what was popular and would get you the gigs. So, but I mean, that movement seemed to have fizzled. So I'm interested to know how, you know, you would definitely, you and Rod were a huge part of that movement.
Yeah.
But you weren't on the level of, you know, the soca artists and the seasonality and getting the big gigs and things. So how did that influence where you are today, where you are, you know, trying to, you are successfully finding ways of making money, especially in a pandemic when people couldn't rely on gigs. How did that influence where you are now?
Okay, so very interesting question, because I think there was a movement, and after, you know, I always pay homage to persons who did it before us. And so I think to me, at least in my generation, spot rushers would definitely influential to anybody who does hip hop in my age group, right? And then there was a bit of a break after, and then spot rushers turned into SR Fam. And then there was a bit of a break after that. Then The Face and his crew, Mekazmiastic, they actually had a song called Cheese Fire and Pack Juice, which was a remix to Snapbacks and Tattoos. And that, I think, opened doors for myself and Young Rudd and others, because it was the first time since Spot Rushers that there was a hip hop hit on mainstream radio.
Okay, just pack juice with a cheese pie, like 2 chains, that's no lie. Good eats and small change for breakfast, that's we style. Pie man is where we line. Whole team eating to the pie done. Your throat dry, my throat dry. One juice left, dice fight down. One
thing about even though it was a remix, and that would have obviously opened doors for my amateur knee, but and the whole movement of trap so and everybody. But just I think the issue with the movement, because we at one point in time we all banded together just like Trinidad, but I think funding is one issue
always always in our local music industry always.
And we never had a bless or funder. You know, and I'll leave it there. I won't go into details about funding, but I think that definitely limited our movement, because we did a lot. We definitely became household names. We were on shows with soca artists. There were some shows that I could talk about where we got more forward than the soca artists, you know. And but I think that everybody thought it was a fad or a phase, even marketing companies. I had friends working in advertising agencies, and our names would come up in meetings, and it'll be us on soca artists. But then they would say, we don't know where this is going, but we at least know that I'm soca artists, most likely going to have a song next year for Carnival. So we lost opportunities because of that, because persons thought that we were fad. And that kind of killed the movement as well, because it was just Mark Hardy and Young Rudd. And then you'll get a Nebula or Chromatics, but we ended up being the frontline people. Mm-hmm. And that with that comes hate and jealousy, and we dealt with that too.
Yeah, so I just give you industry. That happens. Yeah.
And I think, and just to answer your question, Laura, to segue into it, I think of everybody in my camp, I think I realized first what was happening in terms of that this is not going to last forever. And as much as I love and believe in what we're doing, I think that it really, unless we do a song with a big artist, rapper from outside, or unless we migrate, it's going to be the same cycle of a local hip-hop song, gets a little airplay, and then does it for a while. So I got an opportunity. I met Bad Royal. They came to a good Bungie Garland. Uh-huh. And I met them by Double Stand.
Only Trinidad.
Had to be Trinidad. True Reese, big up Reese the Beast from 5 Miles to Midnight. Mm-hmm. You know, Reese connected with them randomly in a juve party and took them to Frankie's for a drink. And as the universe would just align it, I was coming from a party down Shagrama, so I stopped for doubles. And the first person I saw was Reese. And I recognized the guy, because I tend to do a lot of research. Like, I check Bungie's Instagram. I checked to see who Bad Royal was. So when I met them, I knew who they were before. Mm-hmm. So I was able to connect to them very easily. And I took them out, took them to a club. And, you know, we just connected. And they just took a liking to me as a person. And when they were going by Bungie, they say, well, come along. Well, I just became their person in Trinidad.
Okay.
And then they came back for Carnival. And they told me to come up for Miami Music Week with them. Mm-hmm. And that is what opened my mind to all these things. I got thrown into the fire of EDM. The first EDM song I ever did became very popular.
What song was that?
That was Galaxy Ranger.
Some is the danger, I'm the real game changer. Pull up in the dance just like a Galaxy Ranger. I took out my pager, I pulled out my phaser. And lick three shots when we cross the fader. Yo, some of them rubber talk me, some of them talk like they talk about facts. I'm so tense just ahead of the rest of the game. I'm flying to the moon and back. Pull up in a whip with the seat right back. Pull up with the girl, she be on my lap. Pull up with a sniff, take a whiff, pass to the left. Tell me wrench in here, he can bounce right back like danger, danger.
Bad Royal and Mark Hardy.
Yes.
That was signed to Diplo's label,
Mad Decent.
Right. Mm-hmm. They have a subsidiary label called Good Enough. So contracts were put in front of my face. I had nobody to ask. I had to pull my
You have an LLB? Come on. don't even
well, that's the thing. I would say that law is one thing, as in understanding the theory of law in terms of contracts, music industry stuff. But experience is another thing.
True.
And even my entertainment attorney friends here, I tell them, it's not necessarily about this is a good contract or a bad contract. It's about the best contract for you at the time. Because it's not as black and white. Sometimes you could take a contract that the terms may not be the best, but it opens a door for you. And you have to kind of decide. It's like a business decision too. So sometimes a contract could be okay, but you say no, and that closes a lot of doors for you. So I've learned that, you know. So I tell artists that obviously don't sign anything that says in perpetuity. There's certain things you just
don't sign over your life.
That's what I said. So for me, like the first, I could have told Bad Royal, well, you know, this is how much I charge to do vocals, or I'm not doing anything, you know. But I built a relationship with them. They were very fair with me with the contract. Luckily, if people I met in EDM were good people. So I still get money today for the song that I did with them. And that opened doors for me because I did that song with them and the song was played in Ultra. I now became the new Bungie, basically, in EDM.
Wow.
Because around the time, and that's what I liked about EDM, when I noticed that my business brain kicked in there, because unlike soca and unlike any other genre, hip-hop, dancehall, paying your dues is not as prevalent in that industry as an artist. They only care about how your voice sounds.
That's interesting.
Yeah, literally. So the song I was working on after that Galaxy Ranger was with the guy who played the song in Ultra, his name was Party Favor. And they got Waka Flocka Flame was going to be on it. So they were calling big names on me. So it's like surreal. And I realized that, I mean, I've almost worked with some of the biggest names in EDM.
Call names, man.
Already. Almost. It's just
almost,
literally.
Right.
I say almost because I didn't fully understand exactly what they wanted. Remember, I had nobody to guide me. I just, and Kevin Biari from System 32, him and I sat down because I was recording by him. Because my business brain said, okay, I know Rod and Mev, that's my hip hop. You know, Mev understands soca, dancehall, but EDM is so different. The only people I know who do EDM in Trinidad is System 32.
Yeah.
So Kevin lives close to me in Diego Martin, and I went by Kevin and said, Kevin, I could book studio time by to record. And when I went there, I realized, you know what? This makes sense. Let me continue working with Kevin, and Kevin was down. So all my EDM stuff was recorded by Kevin.
Okay.
Then Kevin and I started to write stuff together. And then so from those experiences and seeing the contracts and understanding how EDM works, I was now kind of exposed to licensing sync because I didn't really get any sync from any of the EDM songs that I did. Actually, one song is featured in the gaming world.
Which one?
It's a song I did called Triggered. And that song is actually used still in the gaming world.
You still getting royalties for all these?
Yes, but I'm not going to sell the dream that it's for those particular arrangements, and it's a huge sum. But yes, the answer is every month I get something.
They get something. Okay, more than something. 2 cents.
So, yes. More than certain organizations.
Yes, I know. Yeah, people. Yes, I know exactly what you're saying.
I wouldn't get it too.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's an international show. Call names on.
And I tell people that it was all learning from me now. So I was just like a student of EDM for a while. And then I went every year. I paid my own way to go to Miami Music Week. I performed in Lollapalooza with Bad Royal. Performed in Miami Music Week. And then it became beyond Bad Royal, where other persons started to say, hey, come on, perform, or come and do this. And for me, it was personal investments. Because of all those things and the people I met on those trips, now that there's a pandemic, I have those links.
Relationships. I keep telling that. The music industry is based on relationships. Go ahead.
And then contract-wise, so the first few contracts, I didn't really stress about splits too much. Whatever they offered, I looked at the contract, and my understanding of law, I was like, okay, the most important things to me were the term and these clauses. Just once I don't, I was comfortable signing it because it's a song and not me. So any obligations were just the song. I can do what I want, and I knew that my legal knowledge gave me that, at least that. You know, but it's about four or 5 years now I have that experience, and now I fully understand. I don't want to say fully because you're always learning, but I understand more than most locally how international music contracts work, what publishing is, what syncs are. And now this is my next round of it. I now have some more negotiation power. I now have my own label. I now could sign songs to my label under my own.
What's the name of your label?
Brave House Music Group.
See what I mean, Laura?
Okay.
I love it.
And that's what I was saying. So it was a journey for me. A lot of people in the industry here were confused as to what I was doing. Because after Traps, so they, you know, myself, Rods, we became known as, you know, as these hip hop guys. But then all of a sudden, I think what happened with Traps, so too, is Zest became popular. Zest almost kind of replaced the hip hop movement.
In a way.
Yes.
And it's one of those things in urban. I saw an interview recently where somebody said, in urban music, it's really more about trends, like compared to other genres.
I was going to use the word fads, but you're right. Trends is a better word. Yeah, trends. You're correct, correct. Trends, it constantly changes, yes.
It constantly changes. And they made an interesting statement. They were saying, there isn't much loyalty in the urban music industry. And that gave me perspective, too. Because I have a few mentors I've met along the way. I have a mentor who worked for Bad Boy Records. His name is Young Lord. And he gave me some advice once. And Rudd was with me as well. And he was saying that, I know you're all chasing urban music and the urban music industry. But he was saying that he made more money off of the one song he did for like Pussycat Dolls and Diddy, like a crossover song that he made for a lot of the work he did, you know, in hip hop. And that opened his eyes. So he kind of was just giving my hint there. And I think I'm starting to see that as well. Like, and the thing is, I'm a huge fan of urban music. And to me, that's more exciting. But I look at Shaggy, I look at Sean Paul, I look at Pitbull, I look at their journey and what these artists have done and the numbers that they're clocking. And the fact that whether they have a hit today or not, they will forever tour.
Yes.
And yes, I think I learned that. And soca, and I mean, I know we're not talking about soca, but I bring it back to soca just because. I think that's one thing that's interesting about soca. If you don't have a hit this year or last year, you don't tour.
True.
Yeah. And the artists who had hits in the 90s who were huge don't tour. But in other genres that you could still, even the urban genres, you could still have a tour in Europe. A lot of 90s artists that were like Wu-Tang Clan and, and you know, artists that were big even before that.
Yes.
The 80s and 90s hip-hop artists tour.
Still touring, yeah, quite.
They are tours with the icons, but we don't have that.
They're like rock. They're like rock legends. So artists, I mean, the Beatles and the Rolling Stones had hits in the 60s, and if Paul McCartney and the Rolling Stones still filling stadium up to 2 years ago. So yeah, I know there's a cycle of this whole kind of thing.
I think a lot of times the audience outgrows the music, or they and they move on to something else pretty fast. Yeah. And it doesn't help in our culture where we get accustomed to new music every year. It is very hard to grow an audience with you. It's very, very difficult to grow an audience.
I experienced it. I could give you a little story. Like, I was on the Decibel school tour. And I remember the first year, you know, amazing experience, by the way. Shout out to Simon and the whole Decibel crew.
Yeah, right.
And I think, I remember the first year, Simon was telling me that they were asking students who they wanted. And they said, my name came up. Like, the students were writing Mark Hardy. Then when I went on the tour, there was this frenzy, like, you know, almost like they're so excited to see me. Right? And then year two came, and then it was same excitement, but a little less. And then year three, it was like, well, we want to see Jimmy October. And then year four was we want to see Aaron Duncan. And then, yeah. So I think it was a humbling lesson to me just to show me how fast this could come and go.
Yes. But the thing is, I my eldest is 17. And he was real into Trinidad music, zest music. Yeah. Yeah. Now he was heavily into that. Now he's into grime. So, you see the changes. You're seeing the changes.
Yeah.
And I think for me, I'm 36 now. So I did a lot of self-reflection, especially last year during the pandemic. And I realized, I think that time was that time in terms of me being that hip-hop artist that the youth into like that. Now, I could still make songs for that market, but what's the market that's going to grow with me? And then I look at the artists like Shaggy, Sean Paul, Pitbull. Mm. They are they're almost in their 50s. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter. The age doesn't matter. Because there's a world market, exactly, that they don't, it's not necessarily, yes, they could jump on trends and stuff, but that style of music, which is global, feel-good party music, lives on.
And you have been tapping into that global market. Tell us some of the places you have been collaborating and having releasing songs.
Yeah, so, close by Venezuela. I have my go-to producers in Venezuela now. Big up Wave. We are Venezuelans. And,
I like that.
And Yoelmi, who produced Pronto, produced a new song that I have with the artist from Brazil. And as I say, Brazil, DJ Krell, he's from Brazil, but he lives in Germany. So I actually sang my new song I'm singing in Portuguese.
Trinidad e Tobago, Brazil, Brave Boy, DJ Krell, Baile Funk, baby, vem. Brave Boy, DJ Krell. 1, 2, 3, 4. Vai mulher, chacoalha o rabo. 4, 3, 2, 1. Vai mulher, joga o bumbum.
1, 2, 3, 4. Mexe esse bumbum rápido. 1, 2, 3, 4. Mexe essa bunda agora. 1, 2, 3, 4. Mexe esse bumbum rápido. No baile funk, só vejo bumbum, bumbum.
Wow.
International.
And I'll tell you why I chose that route, because I really had to think, use my business brain last year, and I said, I don't think I'm the most talented artist from Trinidad. Whether I could become that or not is a moot point, but I don't think that I'm necessarily the most marketable artist from Trinidad, but what makes me different from other people and what would make me stand out? And I think is I'm the most open-minded, right? Mm. And I think that business strategy and all those things come into play. But I started to think, what is my competitive edge, as an artist? What's my story? And I realized that there's nobody in my style of music globally, right? Or I'll say at least from the Caribbean pushing globally, who is doing chanting and dancehall stuff in other languages.
Smart move. And the Latin American music market is the fastest growing music market in the world. So more power to you for thinking of going to Venezuela and Brazil.
Yeah. And for me, I write, I'm writing these songs. I'm literally going on Google Translate and writing in English what I want to say, translating it in Spanish or Portuguese. And then I have friends I would ask, my friend Chandra Maraj, she's half Brazilian, half Trini. So she's actually born in Brazil, moved to Trinidad. So her and her sister were able to at least give me some guidance on how to pronounce. Because I think you can go on Google Translate and get the translated stuff, but knowing how to pronounce it and be authentic is a whole nice thing.
It's a whole other thing,
And then I have a song where the hook is in Albanian.
What?
Know? Yeah, so that's wow. Something Haide. And Haide means let's go.
1, 2, 3, let's go!
And then I have some songs, I have more songs in Spanish coming out. I want to tackle French. So I just think that now that's not all I'm going to do, but I'm just saying it's things that I'm trying that I'm seeing the benefit of it, because in their market, they are wowed that somebody from our market could do that, could sing authentically. It's almost like a double authentic. My voice will always be authentically Trini, Caribbean.
Thank you for that.
Right. But then I could authentically pronounce words in their market. So it's like a kind of sweet spot I've discovered, and I'm going with it. You know, it's something that I see success. You know, I definitely see success with it, but I just need to focus.
Yes, Marcus. So you told us you did your collaborations and you had songs in Brazil, Venezuela. You recently released a song with a Nigerian artist.
Right. Which I think that collaboration was very important to me, because I feel like as a black person from Trinidad, as African person from Trinidad, I felt like I didn't grow up too connected to Africa and the African market, especially in pop culture. And I love the fact that Afrobeats is changing that, because it's making African culture cool and trendy and young, urban, cool, trendy. And, you know, it just being black, just celebrating African fashion, African culture, I think is something that, you know, it's a global trend now. And I love that. And I think that I always wanted to do something for the African market. But once again, it's just about how. You know, we don't really have, even though it, for some reason there just aren't those connections happening. And if it's happening, it's artists like Marshall who can do it, you know, Cass, Marshall, Bungie. But like an upcoming artist from Trinidad, how do I link with that upcoming artist in Nigeria? There's no, you know.
What's your link?
Honestly, I use social, I do social media marketing for a living. I have my own company, Ike Consulting Limited. And I know from my social media experience that targeting certain countries are cheaper than targeting others. So Trinidad falls into that category. Nigeria, Uganda, Venezuela, Brazil, Albania, I'm dropping gems there.
Wow, this is knowledge. This is knowledge. And these are all the markets that you're in at present.
Right. So you take $5 US, you invest $5 US on a post on Instagram, and that will give you way more leverage than if you spend that $5 on an American market or the UK market, which is what we're running now.
Talk about understanding the power of social media.
This is nuggets. This is gems.
Yes. Yeah, nah,
this is good.
I got charge subscriptions for this podcast. This is free.
Yeah. The thing is, honestly, the reason why I'm so open in my information is because I put myself back to when I was 15 and I really had nobody to ask. You know, like I had a lot of things happening. Like I almost got to go on tour when I was like 20, 21 in the States. You know, somebody wanted to bring me across for a show. But I just didn't know how to get entertained of these. I asked a few people in the industry. Nobody really wanted to give me real advice on it.
Seriously?
You know, so they more, because they didn't know. They only know how to do it through soccer. But nobody really knows how to do it for somebody who's not doing that. So I missed that opportunity. Certain things would have happened in my career that if I just had somebody to teach me something, I would have been a certain place already, you know? So I'm very open with my advice because I feel like information is to share. I'm not one of those people who trying to withhold information. But yeah, so just to go back on the social media, I boosted to Nigeria and Delphire saw my ad, you know. And I mean, Nigeria, I know there's a stereotype of Nigerians being scammers or being, but I think understanding what they're really dealing with and the level of poverty they're dealing with, you know, in Nigeria and Venezuela as well, you understand sometimes they're slightly aggressive or slightly persistent method of trying to ask you for something. And it became like my relationship with Del became very interesting because just understanding what he's dealing with, understand what's going on over there. Like, you know, like recently some money was sent for him, and in Nigeria they don't even have the IDs, you know, like the plastic IDs we have. They have paper IDs for, not everybody has plastic IDs. They have literally a piece of paper that you print out as your ID.
Wow.
You know? And I think things like that, just like the fact that having clean water for them is a luxury, like a proper luxury, you know. And
for some people, yeah, in that country.
Yeah, not for everybody, because obviously Nigeria.
I don't want the Nigerian ambassador to call them, but say, hey,
of course, of course.
But Marcus, let me ask you this. You think if you were a soca artist, that you would have been exploring all these different markets and doing all these things you're doing now?
I think naturally I have a curious, like, because Laura, since I'm 15, like, I started off with this curious mind. It's who I am. And I think that even if I had success in soca and I did the soca touring, I think I would have played the game of going to the the diaspora fets and performing in Labor Day, but then going to Williamsburg, staying three extra right. days and going to Williamsburg and lying with the hipster. So I think that that would have been who I am. I may not have been as open as I am now, but I think I've always had that curious mind.
Right. And speaking about, you know, being open and wanting to help people, you are in the process of establishing a database of Caribbean music to help other artists walk through some of those doors that you've been able to open for yourself.
Right. So I actually had an interesting experience, and all this came through EDM, which is library music. I met a young fellow by the name of Ty Frankel, another stranger who found me through Instagram and through Facebook advertising. And he was looking for dancehall artists. And I think he heard the song with myself and Bad Royal. And I started to do work with him. And I've been working with him for the past 4 or 5 years. And that's how the Fast and the Furious opportunity came. That's how the Cleveland Cavs opportunity came. And he always encouraged me to do my own thing. Like he was saying, like, why don't you do this in the Caribbean? And I thought about it for a while. I just didn't know if I could. And then I have the right team. You know, I have to big up Martin, Man Mohan, Kevin Bihari, Kira Muhammad. Those are my business partners on this venture. And it's called the Content Island. And it's basically going to be a hub for stock Caribbean content, so stock music. So if it is you want to do a social media video, even for this podcast, the intro music for this podcast, if you all wanted to change it,
Casey, you can go on the Content Island. Thank you very much. Right? you get challenged. Go ahead.
Right. You can go on the contentisland.com mm-hmm. within the next month or two, hopefully. If you just want to make sure I launch it properly. And choose a song, pay however much money, you know, for it, download it. And it's
US dollars or $TT you're charging. E-commerce isn't localized as yet, and that is one stumbling block for me as a person who's a little older than you.
Our prices are in US, but we are incorporating WePay on the website.
Thank you.
Yeah. So the target market is the Caribbean, but mm-hmm. we don't want to alienate the foreign market. There's a foreign demand for Caribbean music.
Yes, there
so
is.
So it's music. Mm-hmm. It's also we'll go into photos. So I know a lot of advertising companies in Trinidad. Mm-hmm. The black people they use, the Indian people they use, don't look better from the Caribbean.
Nah, nah.
It's a different state of Caribbean people. We look a certain way.
Yeah,
and then certain mixes in the Caribbean don't really
exist anywhere else in the world.
On stock photo, and then if you want to get drone footage of Port of Spain, if you want to get, so I think that is something that I'm really excited about because I think that there's need. And I mean, as I say, like people always say, like, you know, what about competition? Competition is welcome. I think that we need this service. So if we do it and somebody else does it after to compete with us, it's better that happens.
Exactly. Competition is what is necessary. Yeah. More poetry for that. I like that. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, no, so I think I just had a lot of time to think last year. And I think that I just started to think of music as, I remember Janelle fronting. She dropped a gem on me sometime. We were talking and she was talking about just music being everywhere with the audiobooks and stuff. And I started to think, you know, music really is everywhere. Like music is.
It is.
And I started to think, wait, why can't Caribbean music be everywhere? You know, video games, TV, this, that. And somebody have an app. And somebody always needs music for something. Mm-hmm. And so that's really where I got the idea. And also, that helped me earn money, passive income, mm-hmm. to reinvest in my music. When I was doing stuff for Shutdown Music, the company in LA, it really helped me through some tough times because it added up.
So, Marcus, seeing the success you've had doing that and the fact you were able to earn an income during this pandemic, have other artists reached out to you for assistance in going that route as well?
Yeah, I mean, as I say, Laura, I'm so open with my information. And I did a panel with Music TT where I spoke about international networking. But I'm just going to be very blunt and honest. I think that you have to want to do it because even with all these, the reason why I dropped these gems, because I know 80% of people are not going to take this advice. So, you know, that's just another
issue. At their peril. I'm sorry, at their peril.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So it's like, yes, there are artists have reached out to me and asked me how I could get linked to do this and how to. And when I give them information, they're not doing it. You know, like they don't want to put in any work. Like, you know, they just want somebody to literally do everything for them for free. Mm-hmm. You know, And I tell them, I say, at the end of the day, I am a nice person. I'm a very giving person. But I didn't work this hard to do all this to just
give it away for free. Yeah,
that doesn't make me a good businessman if I do that. So I started consulting to an extent, and I say, listen, if it is your serious, I'm going to email. And these are my, this is my fee. You know, I even willing to work with your budget. I understand the you know, restrictions and being an upcoming artist. But the truth is, I think that a lot of persons talk about what they want to do, but don't act on it. And I think that, but there are few who are serious, and there are few, but it's very few. So I'm going to leave that there.
It's quite sobering to hear you say that, but there's something that I have observed as I just write about me as well. You know, let's call me something most critical, some kind of, but that you do. But I think critically what you said there, I think it was important for the people to understand the music business is a business. And business is not easy. It's hard work. And it's serious work. And then you can't do things. The things about doing things for free, Trent, I just get a piece of information for free. But I'm glad that you continue to mention the fact that it's a business, that you have to pay me for my work.
I'll give you an example, right? Because I'm in the process of negotiating something with Zumba, right? And it's a really good opportunity. And how I got that opportunity.
Relationships.
I didn't know anybody in Zumba. All I know is I have a friend, you know, big up my friend Bella. She's a Zumba instructor in Trinidad. She was schooling me, you know, Bella. Bella was schooling me on what Zumba is. She showed me that it's an app. Zumba has a label. They sign songs internally. to be used in Zumba. And I just soaked in all this information and she told me last year. And I just started to do my research and I started to make music more tailored towards dancing Zumba. And like about a month ago, I didn't know anybody in Zumba. And then I started to search online for Zumba instructors. I messaged them personally. Hey, I'm an artist from Trinidad. Do you mind taking a listen to my song? Just let me know what you think. And one of them introduced me to somebody in the Zumba world and who's in charge of music. And that is how I got the opportunity, you know?
You know, that is so funny that you say that. There was a Twitter Spaces talking about music a couple of weeks ago. And I mentioned in that Twitter space, while everybody's waiting on entertainment sector to open up or in Caribbean or abroad, I said that there are opportunities and niches that artists could explore beyond the live gig. Like you don't need to just sit down and wait for the live gig. And the exercise market, the fitness market, huge market for music. I know there are a lot of Peloton instructors that use soca music. Mm-hmm. Marshall had a relationship with Zumba actually. So that market is huge. There's so many.
Huge. And big up Teja, Mikhail Teja. He Eman Cohen song is officially assigned to Zumba as you know, on the app and stuff.
That's very
so
good.
But the thing is, you know, it is Laura and Nigel. I think we have to understand that if you're playing in those other leagues, you have to play by their rules. So what the soca they like.
Exactly.
It's a specific type of soca.
We didn't invent it.
You have to study the market. You have to study the market. And I think that I sent Zumba a few songs and the song that they chose and they like is not the song I thought they would, you know. And I think that these are things that you have to learn. Like even with the Latin market, we listen to reggaeton and we feel like, oh yeah, we sing something in Spanish and repetitive and we can have a reggaeton. Just like how people feel about soca. Soca is an art too, right? You know, soca is an art. I respect soca writers and artists because not everybody can write a soca song despite the fact that people make jokes about
true.
It.
That is so true.
Is
right?
True.
Why, if anybody can write a soca hit, why is that artist who go years without a soca hit after they had one?
I judge the preliminary soca monarch a couple of years ago and I listened to over 100 soca tunes. Trust me. They have a lot of people who cannot write soca.
And Laura, we were talking about grime music. I actually have grime music out. You know, like before I went to the UK, like I went to the UK to perform just before the pandemic, just a very small, you know, thing. And I had to study grime music. Like London was a hard market for me to understand because London, now it's a little different with the fact that drill is and grime is a little more popular with the younger generation. But understanding how that music works and how to get linked in that world is hard for me because I actually find the reggaeton was easier and all these other genres are easier. But I found London is a kind of closed space, like it's its own industry.
Yeah.
And then going there, it is totally different from what I thought it would be. So I think that artists had to be you had to put any work, and I think that that's one of those things. And I know Nigeria, I know you all saying I'm an artist making money and thinking during this pandemic, but I'm not going to sell a dream to people that this is making me rich, you know, like, it still is a work in progress. The income coming in is growing.
I think it's the seeds, you know? It's the seeds that you're planting right now will probably bear fruit down the road. Because as it is right now, you're earning, as you said, passive income through royalties and that kind of stuff. But certainly somewhere along the line, somebody's going to want to see you perform. Because at the end of the day, I think audiences still like to see a live performance. Right.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So that the opportunity is still going to arise for you. And what I'm hearing is opportunities are arising for you in Albania, in Venezuela, in Brazil, London, in Rome, all these markets that we haven't openly discussed, approached from a business sense, certainly from Trinidad and Tobago. You have founded via social media. More power to you again for that, and understanding the power of social media and how to use it wisely. And you've gotten into markets and I want to ask you a question though, because you told me that you did the Cleveland Cavaliers gig. You did, I think, what is a game, a video game. I want to know numbers. I don't have to give me detailed numbers, but give me a ballpark figures. What is this? You say you're not making a lot of money, but what is not a lot of money? Hundreds of dollars?
Well, for me, and as I was saying, I'd say like a few hundred US, you know, was what I got from these. And that is because of how it was done. You know?
Lump sums, or is that you're going to get continual payments down the road?
No, I get continual. So that's like a advance.
Okay.
So in library music, you get an advance, but you don't know what it's going to be used for. Right, but now the game changer is I leveled that up, and now I'm in direct contact with the people who the music supervisors. So I use these opportunities to directly connect myself. So now it would be different, you know. So the figures will definitely change now, but I can tell you, like, things go anywhere from, as I mentioned, hundreds to 50. Like it could be anywhere from like $1,000 to $50,000, depending on the.
Did you get more for the basketball theme or for the game, the video game?
It was around the same thing, but it's like the royalties is where that's really adds up.
Okay, gotcha.
You know, just to be honest, because this is a transparent conversation, you know, and
I appreciate your honesty. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, no, and that's what I'm not telling me dream that, because I sometimes people can see these things, but it's what you, and that's why I was giving you advice on the contracts before. Now, I know my worth as an artist. I know how I've worked. But I'm a nobody out there. I might be somewhat of a somebody in Trinidad. And this is where a lot of our artists fail to. Because you could be a big fish in a small pond and you're going out there with big fish attitude. And then somebody presents the opportunity.
Talk.
I'll be honest, I don't want to call examples, but I know I'm in the industry. I know everybody's business. And that has messed up so many deals, and people need to understand that sometimes you could take a deal for the bigger picture and the long term, and just getting a foot in could end up making you millions rather than you're asking for a few thousand now. And you know, you close it, you know, is that you selling them take it or leave it, you're replaceable. You know,
exactly.
And I think that for me, so that's why I say, despite what the PR was amazing for these particular opportunities that I got, but I think what's important for me is the doors that it opened. And I could speak for the Fast and the Furious one. Like, I am now in contact with a music supervisor from Fast and the Furious because of that, you know.
Wow.
And that was from us talking to each other on Instagram. He saw that, he saw the article in the papers, he saw the article on Loop TT. So
Laura, thank you.
I post them things. So, I can tell you these things are like this. These are real things that happen. So it's like you have to understand all these things. Like you have to understand it's a long term. Like as Nigel rightfully said, I'm planting seeds. To me, I think about it a lot sometimes. That if I sound soca because of my networks and because of image and different things, I could have definitely been more financially successful from music, right? And further in some ways in the society's eyes of I'm a big artist compared to people still refer to me as a small artist from Trinidad, right? But I see it as high risk, high reward. And this global market I'm playing with, if I get one hit in the Latin market, which I plan to get way more than one, but I'm just saying, if I get one hit in Afrobeat, Brazilian, any of these, They talking about billions of views.
It's a billion, like, yeah. And the reggaeton just dropped billion views normal. That's a normal thing.
My life will hurt. And that's why, you know, Kevin Little may not be the most successful soca artist in terms of hits in soca market, right? But he's the most successful in terms of international success. Don't have to lift a finger.
I wrote an article about a month ago doing a comparison between just where is soca, and I compare dancehall, reggaeton, and soca. And you're quite correct. Yeah. If soca is getting millions or tens of millions, the biggest soca song was Kevin Little's song, right? Champion by Dwayne Bravo actually got 100 billion views. You define that song for me, but I'm not complaining, right? But Daddy Yankee dropped about 4 or 5 billion view videos on YouTube. That's a normal thing for him to do, right? So and this is Shaggy and Sean Paul, they're the top couple hundred million views. So we're operating in tens of millions versus hundreds of millions versus billions, right?
Yeah.
Our music is not that highly ranked, but we also have multiple streams of revenue. So that an artist like yourself or like Marshall, who may be popular in Trinidad, can have other streams of revenue. I'm very happy that you identified that multiple streams of revenue. I'm also happy that you're able to quantify it. You said a couple of
dollars. And it took time. As I said, like EDM was one of those things, like just go into the detail a little more, because I know that we want to give practical examples. But initially, I was not sure if to charge or charge for vocals. So I started, the first few I did, I didn't charge. And then other people in the industry told me, like, you know, you can charge for vocals. And I was like, how much to charge? Then they'll tell me a figure. So I'll gauge that, maybe charge a little under because I'm new and I had to go through that. And then I realized that, yes, I'll get paid upfront for those songs, but then I don't really hear from the producers after that. I'm just another vocalist. So then I started to meet younger producers who couldn't afford to pay me. And I would figure out how to work with them. And I would tell them, hey, well, I will do the vocals for you for free if you produce a track for me and we'll battle. And that is how I started to. So, and I learned that from, I had to bring up Richie Loop. Richie Loop is another artist in my, he's a popular artist from Jamaica, but he's like the boss of EDM dance EDM. And stuff.
Okay.
And I think he was schooling me on how, you know, the game of it, and an ex-friend Styles from Jamaica. And as you think, like, my mentors are now mainly people from other countries, you know? Like, well,
if you're the number one in Trinidad, who else is your mentor?
No, well, as I was saying, I really do wish that I could have more convos like this in Trinidad. At the end of the day, it is what it is.
Welcome to Music Matters, the Caribbean edition. We're here to serve you. Go ahead.
but I think the seeds that I am planting right now, I know for a fact, we could have the same interview in 5 years. And look back at it, and you would see that everything I was doing was making sense. And it takes a lot of patience because, I mean, I will say those things casually, like, yeah, I message Zumba instructors, but I literally message 100 Zumba instructors, right? In 2 days or in three days. And it's like, I don't think artists have that kind of dedication here to do that, or even managers. And I think that on the ground, you know, I'm literally hitting the ground on the internet messaging, and that's what you know for sure. So why I say that's good too, we have this thing we say, soca go and make it, or Trinidad bus this or this and that, but sometimes we just talk internally, as in within our domestic market. I think what I like about what I'm doing is asking people one time from another market, hey, you like this or you don't like this? You know? Or what do you like about it, what you don't like about it? And I think that we need more of that, you know, from local music to understand the international market, because we think we know everything. We don't. You know, we don't know everything. You know,
Marcus, we don't need to wait till 5 years to say you what you were saying was making sense, because we think you are making sense now. I really like the fact that, I mean, there's so many things with you. The fact that you are not a mainstream artist, the fact that you curious, the fact that you understand business and you've understood the business of music for a long time.
And you're putting in the work.
Putting in the work. The fact that you understand the importance of networking and making relationships. The fact that you understand how to use social media effectively. The fact that you understand that you need to dedicate a lot of man hours to get what you want. There's no magic bullet. It literally comes down to doing the work and embracing multiple things at the same time. And I think this pandemic has shown how necessary what you are doing is. It is necessary because if your whole career is built around just live performances, situations that we found ourselves in due to COVID-19 is going to set you back, is going to hamper you, is going to affect your income earning potential. But what you are doing has longevity. So long after, you don't have to be a big popular artist to keep making money because you're already laying the foundation.
Passive income is what is going to drive you.
And I'll give you another perspective too. So like, I wouldn't say that I have any international hits in any of the genres I've done, but I will be collecting royalties on a, like, I guess for some monthly basis, for some quarterly basis for the rest of my life, you know, on these songs. And it's because the way how these other genres go, it could pick up somewhere in 5 years and just become bigger. It could, you know. So it's just a bigger pool. That's what I mean. So
yeah.
I look at it like that. Like I look at it like little investments. Like I people say I release a lot of music, but I look at it as investments as well because the numbers add up. Like, and that's what I want artists to know. Like I'm not getting $100,000 or $50,000 from one song, like the US from one song as yet. But the catalog I have is adding up, you know, so that.
What's the size of it right now? How many songs you have out there?
As Brave Boy.
As well.
I think I probably have like at least 60 songs in my catalog.
Okay. And at least 60 songs. Yeah. That's important because I've always posited that I think our local market does not produce enough music. I mean, as much as you hear 1,000 soca tunes every year and that kind of stuff, outside of the soca cycle, we should produce an equal amount of songs and we don't, right? So artists such as yourself, Jimmy October, who produces music outside of Carnival, more power to y'all, but we need a whole lot of artists producing a whole lot of music. And as in markets that are not the kind of popular markets, if we always go to Miami, New York, and Toronto, but in other markets, Albania. We tell me Albania, I'm just thinking, this man is a pioneer. Why Albania?
No, I say like Serbia. Like I did two songs with a producer from Serbia, you know, last year to this year. The most random is Taiwan. Like I have a song. I think people always ask me what's the most random market. Mm-hmm. For me, it's because I'm in a Facebook chat with myself and three Taiwanese producers and artists, and it's in Mandarin. So sometimes I forget, and then I just see all this Chinese writing show up on my phone. And I think for me, I mean, we laugh about it all the time. And once, so we have a translator, the main producer is the main producer. There's another producer who's the translator, and myself, and a rapper came in after. But once we were on a call, like we were on a Zoom call, and the translator got cut off of the call, and it was just me and the other guy on the call, and we couldn't talk because he can't understand English, and I can't understand Chinese.
Yeah. Right?
But I think that is the most interesting for me, just because culturally, I haven't seen that. I don't know anybody from Trinidad doing music with the Chinese market or the, you know, like that.
All I have to say is, if you think the Latin American market is the biggest market, wait until you get into the Chinese music market.
No, and that's that. I'm looking at that. And
let's not play games. Confucian capitalism is now real and alive. The biggest market in the world now is China.
Exactly.
And everybody's going there. The film industry is going there. The whole music industry is going there. More power to you.
I think I can't remember. I think Mandarin was the number two or number one most spoken language in the world, which kind of blew my mind.
Correct.
Because I always thought it was, and that's the thing, being in the Western world, thought it's English, you know.
By far. Spanish, I think, no, I'm not sure if there are more Spanish speakers, but English is universal throughout Europe, but Mandarin definitely is the number one language in the planet. That's quite correct.
And I'm going to do a song, I have to do a song in Mandarin, right? But to me, that is the most interesting one. And that hasn't dropped yet. We shot a music video. They shot in Taiwan and I shot in Trinidad. And I'm excited to release that. I think it's going to release over the summer. But for me, I was going to make the point of, I think the cost of making music is what holds back a lot of artists from. Because music is expensive. But that's where you have to build your brand. And I think for me, the honest truth is, I built my brand and reputation fast in the international industry through EDM. Mm-hmm. So that I am able to do music very cost effectively because I am able to bring things to the table to reduce the price or to get a deal where I don't pay and we just split it because they know that if they do a song with me, it's going to go somewhere. And I think that that is a reputation I've built from anybody who sees me on social media from other countries. Mm-hmm. They can look at me and see that, okay, this guy is on his way. So I invest in him.
Gotcha.
And I think a lot of artists not willing to do that. So they, especially, I don't know, I don't want to make it like a knock in soca, but there are X amount of soca producers here, pool of soca producers, and people there, they're seen as the go-to. If you don't have a song from them, you're not going to get hit. Mm. But I'm telling people straight up, very soon, somebody going to pay a producer from another country who's struggling, mm-hmm. whether it's an African country or a Spanish-speaking country or European country, mm-hmm. and send them a soca reference and say, make a beat like that for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. So I was just saying, it's like, we need to work on that, the relationships between the writers and the producers and the artists better, because anybody replaceable, I tell people that shit.
relationships, and I don't want to dampen that, but that, I think that is the key thing. I heard that definition from somebody else, that in music industry is about relationships, and sometimes talent is less important than relationships. Yeah. So you have to always remember that.
Okay, Marcus, this is, I'm really glad we got you here on the podcast to talk about what you've been doing. I think it is very instructive. I hope artists who are around the Caribbean who are listening could mm-hmm. take a page and really put in the work. Because like we said earlier, everyone will not have the opportunity to go abroad at this time mm-hmm. to perform, even in non-soca events, because even though it looks from here like things are opening up, when I talk to artists already out there, it's not as open as we think it is. And mm-hmm. if you're not a top billing artist, you're mm-hmm. not going to get the opportunities right now. So now is the time for artists to get serious, sit down and think about your career, sit down and think about the fact that you're not going to be popular forever, that you need longevity, and you're doing something you're passionate and you love, but you want to live from it. So I think this has been very instructive. Kudos to you. And
Thank you very much. Continue
to do what you're doing, man. You know, you will always have our support. For sure.
Yeah, you're a smart guy. And Laura can tell you this. I said it already, but you see smarts, when you're smart and you're in the music business, I respect you.
Yes.
And you have proven in terms of your strategy with utilizing social media effectively and recognizing that there are markets outside of the kind of Caribbean diaspora markets. You've done that and you've done the work, because what you've given off to the last hour or so is examples of doing the work. And that is a necessary thing in the music industry, whether in the Caribbean or anywhere in the world. If you don't do the work, you'll not get anywhere, because other markets don't recognize us as easily as they would recognize a Puerto Rican. But if they know that you're doing the work and they say, oh boy, this fella doing something, take a look at you, and you've been doing it and you've been recognized. Hey, Fast and Furious, you can't fix for that.
I think when I realized how real that was, is how I'm really connected to the music supervisor now myself. That's mm-hmm. tell you how real. Yes, the deal I got is not what everybody would probably think it is, mm-hmm. but it opened probably one of the biggest doors of my career so far. That's going to lead to, bigger and better.
You always have to have a first step, and this is your first step.
And that's what I'm saying is, it's almost like how, in Trinidad, like most people start performing for free and then eventually you get paid something. So I'm fortunate in these industries to at least get paid to start,
Right? I wouldn't recommend free performances. I'm sorry. I'm not a fan of that. But at the same time,
I think it's the same thing to start. Everybody has to start from somewhere. But I think I think I have enough knowledge and expertise now. I know how to negotiate. I know how it works.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand how to negotiate now. Mm-hmm. It took me years to learn. And if I had a mentor who went through this, and he was able to say, all right, for this, here, what are you doing? You're doing this and that, but I hope to be that person, and I hope there are more people like me to just educate the younger generation, because there's so much talent here. I mean, you always come to Kaiser Blues for Unplugged and Chill. Yep. Myself and Young Red continue doing that just because of, we just felt like, wow, look at all this talent.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
But the issue is, we have all the talent in the world, but what is the next step now? And this goes for Trinidad, this goes for Zest, hip hop, anything, soca. When you finish getting your becoming the big fish in the small pond, what is next? Or for us who don't sing soca, what's the biggest thing you could open for artists who come down?
You will be that mentor who will advise and answer that question, right? Yeah. But for tonight, I have to say thank you very much, Mark Hardy, Brave Boy, Marcus Brave Boy, any one of the aliases, but we'll call you Brave Boy for the time being. And thank you very much for being in the show, and thank you very much for sharing that knowledge and dropping some gems, as you say, for free. So
anytime.
Not a problem. So, not a problem. Laura. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So Laura, as usual, enlightened conversation, and you know it is. So what more can I say? You say it for me now.
You have been listening to Music Matters,
the Caribbean edition. I'm Nigel Campbell.
And I'm Laura Dowridge Phillips.
Bye.
Hey everyone, thanks so much for listening to Music Matters, the Caribbean edition. If you enjoyed the podcast, please like, subscribe, and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Music Matters Caribbean. And if you want to listen to our previous podcasts and keep up with our new material, check out the website podcast.iradio.tt or listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Radio Public, and more of your favorite podcast platforms.